Hello and welcome to Mind in Mind. My name is Jane O'Rourke. I'm a child, adolescent and family psychotherapist. Mind in Mind is a new podcast. We're featuring interviews with some of the world's leading clinicians working in child mental health, sharing what they know about what best helps children. On our website, which is mindinmind.org.uk, you'll find videos of our interviews and our guest bloggers writing about the latest research and innovation to give depth of thinking to topical issues in family and child mental health. In this podcast, I'm interviewing Gray Music, a child, adolescent and adult psychotherapist. He has a passion for neurobiology, psychoanalysis, attachment theory, mindfulness. Well, the list could go on. Because Graham's curious mind is always on the lookout for the less explored areas of psychotherapy and how to think about difficult subjects. And this subject today, which I'm interviewing him on, is somewhat ironically perhaps very much overlooked. I'm talking about neglect. Emotional neglect as a therapeutic challenge is too little understood. Neglect, of course, is different from abuse and overt trauma, as it's about the good experiences which haven't been received, not the bad ones that have been suffered. To quote Graham, he says neglect is about the effects of not receiving the growth-inducing experiences that help minds grow, emotional lives thrive, and hearts come alive. It's being held in mind, understood, thought about, cherished, and enjoyed, which gives rise to emotional growth. This is just what neglected children do not get. Here he describes the different types of neglect, the neurobiological findings, and the clinical techniques which might be helpful.
It's something I try to remain passionate about, though interestingly, neglect is something that it's quite hard to be passionate about. So I realised I worked for many years, maybe 15 years in the Tavistock Fostering Adoption and Kinship Care team. And since then and before that, I was working with this kind of patient group. And I realised there's a group of patients, clients, children, young people, adults, who just didn't have the good enough early experiences for their personalities to grow and develop. And that in their presence, often I felt all kinds of things which I wished I wasn't feeling. So I might feel bored, I might feel, I might find myself making shopping lists that I didn't want to tell anybody that I was doing. I might find in my body posture or in my tone or my feelings, I might feel very dulled down. And I thought this was because I was a bad therapist. What I didn't realise, took me ages to realise, was A, this is quite common with people with particular kinds of presenting backgrounds, and B, I wasn't alone in this. And that what these people had, how these people had adapted to their very neglectful environments, and maybe the kind of the classic one would be, I worked with quite a lot of these kids who were in these very awful Ceausescu regime Romanian orphanages, is that they had shut down and in order to survive. So there's a slight difference, and both bits are true. They both had to shut down against the awfulness of there not being a growth-inducing human experiences, but also the lack of growth-inducing human experiences meant that certain parts of their brains and nervous systems, etc., just didn't develop. They didn't develop interest in themselves and other people. And so they became very deadened in themselves. Some of them developed quite good cognitive skills, but emotionally they didn't. And the neuroscience is absolutely clear about this. Very, very little capacity often to reflect on themselves and other people, to recognize other people's emotions, because why would they? Because no one's ever recognized their emotions. And so with those people, we often feel, like some people describe with autistic, very autistic kids as well, a kind of dullness, a deadness. And then our job is to really process that dullness and deadness in ourselves, to know what it feels like, because in a way that gives us a clue as to what it might feel like to be them. So there's a kind of paradox there. You have to be with it, but if you're so in it that you can't get out of it, and you're making shopping lists and thinking about what you're going to make for dinner, then that is not going to help your patient. So you have to really know this feeling, get interested in it, get to know it, and then you have to find some way of hauling yourself out of it sufficiently while not defending against it too much.
I think you've described it as one foot in the ditch, haven't you?
Yeah. My greatest psychotherapy lesson probably was my first weeks at the Minster Centre when I was training as an adult psychotherapist, integrative psychotherapist. A guy called Dennis Hyde, who I'll never forget, brilliant teacher. And he was making us do role plays, and he said, and then he said, look, think of your patient as being in a ditch, and your job is not to get in the ditch with them so neither of you can get out, but nor is it to be up on the bank waving at your patient, because so what you need is to have one foot firmly in the ditch, one foot firmly on the bank, and offer a hand to that patient, and so that they know there's space outside the ditch that you're coming from, but also that you can get right in there with them as well. And it's getting that balance right, and for every patient it's different. But actually, for these, getting in the ditch, in effect, is when you're dull, bored, not there at all. And so noticing our own levels of dullness and can allow us to move out of that. And then watch, one of the fascinating things with these very negative patients is that we don't see the little moments of hope because we're so dulled down as they are. So if you see them, if you see a tiny hint of excitement, I'd stop it. What was going on there? What's happening with your hands there? Well, it looked like you might have been a bit interested, And then that might develop something which might then become part of their personality in time.
So is that the key to therapeutic growth? Finding those moments where you see aliveness, just even just small sparks of aliveness in a dulled down patient.
Yeah, I think with neglected kids, it's a very central part of what will make a difference in the long term. And it's slow, incremental, moment by moment work, which eventually can give rise to a lot of these kids can't play, a lot of these kids can't symbolize, a lot of these kids don't know what fun is. So Jaap Panksepp, for example, talks about the seeking system, the pleasure system, used to be called the appetitive system. We need an appetite for life. We need what the neurobiologists talk about in terms of dopamine. We need to be excited and joyful and want good things for life. That's part of our evolutionary heritage. So think about evolution. We have to, if we didn't move towards enjoyment of food and sex and things like that, then we wouldn't be able to reproduce. These very neglected patients, whether it's children or adults, don't have an experience of excitement, joy, pleasure, a seeking system, and that's what we're trying to develop with them. And actually, that comes from having fun with somebody. They haven't had the playfulness that gives rise to emotional growth.
So tell me more about how emotional deprivation, neglect actually affects the brain from a neurobiological perspective.
Well, I think we'll learn more as we go along. I think the thing about neuroscience is that we think we know a lot because we know an awful lot more than we did 30 years ago, but actually we're probably still at the very beginnings. But we know that, for example, the parts of the brain involved in emotional recognition, recognizing other people's emotions, are much less developed. The parts of the brain involved in autobiographical narrative, telling stories, are much less developed. The parts of the neurochemical system, like the dopamine system, are much less activated. So they don't have excitement and joy and pleasure, as I said. The parts of the body, for example, a lot of these Romanian orphans had very low levels of oxytocin. They didn't release oxytocin when they were cuddled by their adopted mothers in the way their biological kids do, which means that oxytocin, central to trust, love, care, interest in other people's and your own emotions, bonding. So all those things get quite profoundly affected. It's quite hard to re-trigger those processes so that they catch up with, your lovingly brought up child, but you can move in that direction. And I think the other thing about these kids, and actually it's true in all work with trauma, whether it's trauma or neglect, is that we have to note and be really clear when there's been a little step in the right direction. And it's something that I've often talked about with, for example, adoptive families who often feel that because their child isn't like the other kids in their class, that they're failing or the kid's never gonna, not making progress. But if we go back to where they started, we see real progress. It might be not as far as the other kids, but it's real progress. And once they realize they're making real progress, they feel better, they can help their kids to feel better, and then more progress is possible. If we feel that it's all hopeless, then no progress gets made.
Many thanks to Graham Music. You can also read Graham's written thought piece and find our downloadable PDF about neglect at mindinmind.org.uk, where you'll find many other interviews to deepen our understanding of child mental health. Many thanks for listening.